Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading Camp Redwood, A Running Out of Counselors. These children are not children. This is a three-part series by the Magnificent Trashdia, so I really hope you enjoy this series, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. If you'd like to support the channel, check out the links in the description of this video and or episode for more information. Let's get started. In hindsight, I should have listened to the Kill Bill alarms in my head. When 8-year-old Cassie announced she and her cabin mates were going to skip out on camp activities and play Operation instead. Though it's not like I didn't have things on my mind. 7 counselors had gone missing, along with our head counselor who was supposed to be taking care of us. It started out fairly normal. I mean, 1 or 2 counselors wasn't bad, right? Lily and Joey had been drowning in sexual tension for a while, so nobody was surprised when they sneaked into the woods for what I could only guess was the most uncomfortable sex ever. But then they didn't come back. Teddy and Yuri went to look for them, and then they also disappeared. It was almost like a wild animal was lying in wait for another unsuspecting teenager to cross its path. With 6 of us left, I was definitely freaking out. I wasn't expecting summer camp to be like this. I did consider working in my local Sephora, but Mom had a preference. And whether I was 18 years old or not, she was getting her way. So, it was goodbye civilization and hello Canadian wilderness. There were 15 kids queued up in front of me for lunch, and I was having a hard time keeping that optimistic Camp Redwood smile. I couldn't help constantly counting how many hours it had been since the latest disappearance. Connor. He was supposed to be helping with getting the emergency generator going after the electricity sizzled out. The boy was gone an hour later. This was happening fast. Whatever was going on with the counselors was burning through all of us. Would it happen to me? I had seen so many TV shows and movies set in a summer camp where every camper and counselor was doomed to die in the grossest way possible. Was that going to happen to us? I tightened my grip around the stupid ladle. I had found myself stirring a giant pot of chocolate syrup, watching watery chocolate drip from the edge. I felt nauseous. Of all the summer camps Mom had to send me to, it had to be the one with vanishing counselors and 0 adult authority, which meant we were the authority. 12 teenagers who came to relax and babysit a bunch of little kids before college. We had to put on brave faces and pretend everything was absolutely fine, and we weren't all terrified out of our damn minds. At the corner of my eye, I glimpsed Harry offering piggybacks to a bunch of little kids, with one of the littles, Eleanor, wrapping her arms around his neck and squealing. From the look on the boy's face, he wanted to stop. It was hard to keep a facade when reality was becoming harder and harder to bear. Abandoning his hat entirely, Harry was dripping with sweat, trying to twist his lips into the Camp Redwood grin. But looking closer as he galloped across the cabin with Eleanor holding on for dear life, the guy was ready to collapse. I didn't blame him. Entertaining the kids was supposed to be Teddy's assignment, and he was who knows where. I had taken over lunch duties for Lily, who had joined the long list of the missing. Harry was supposed to be joining the search party for the missing counselors, but I'd ended up becoming the little's personal punching bag. When I first met him, Harry Carlisle had been the kid who sat on the sidelines and offered sarcastic remarks and crude jokes. Now, he had been reduced to a playground ride the kids pretended didn't have an off switch. He had enjoyed maybe the first 2 rides to raise morale, but now I could see the strain in his eyes. "Ow!" Harry winced when the little girl's fingers prodded at his eyes. "Hey, Eleanor, not my eyes!" He was dangerously close to toppling over, though he managed to catch his footing, ordering all of them off of his back. "Horse rides are over!" He cupped his mouth, shouting across the cabin when a group of kids surrounded him with equally terrifying faces. Harry backed away and threw his hands up. "Come on, guys! My back isn't built for all of you!" "Horsey!" the kids shouted back in a cacophony of giggles. It was 10 against 1. Against 2 if I got involved, which wasn't going to happen. There was no way I was putting effort into play fighting a bunch of 8-year-olds. Harry shot me a hopeful look, though I pretended not to see, busying myself with slightly burned nuggets. Running his fingers through his thick strands of sandy-colored hair, Harry pulled a face when a little girl, Phoebe, was brave enough to step forward. "No," Harry shook his head, squeezing the front of his counselor shirt practically glued to him. The temperature still hadn't let up, and it was heading towards 8 p.m. Nighttime, I thought dizzily. It was almost bedtime and still no adults. I refuse to surrender, he told her. Phoebe, I'm not joking around when I say my back is hurting. We've been playing horsies for 2 hours. So? So? Harry couldn't yell or hiss or swear at them. That was a big no-no with kids. However, I could see he was coming close to breaking that rule. Because I'm tired, he said through a Camp Redwood grin, which was quickly turning into a grimace. I think all of us had given up with the fake enthusiasm when our colleagues started to vanish. Now we were just shells of our former happy selves. And, did you know that if you ride horsey at this time, the ghosts will come and get you? When a boy opened his mouth, his eyes widening with fright, Harry realized his mistake.
I mean the nice ghosts. Yeah, the nice ghosts who hunt. I mean play in the woods. It's a well-known Camp Redwood legend that ghosts don't like horse rides. In fact,
his lips curved into a devilish smile. Now he had several faces staring at him. The kids dropped onto the ground to listen, their hands clasped in their laps. This was the quietest they had been all day. I could understand, though. Harry had taken the reins around the campfire telling ghost stories for 3 nights in a row, and the guy was a damn good storyteller. With every eye on him, Harry lowered his voice into a whisper.
Do you guys want to know what they do?
The kids nodded with wide eyes.
They sneak into unsuspecting cabins.
Harry! Rowan's voice came from outside in a warning. The window was open and the guy was standing watch to see if any counselors came back. Since the only adult had disappeared, he had been appointed leader, and the guy was taking himself a little too seriously. His warning was valid, though. Sometimes Harry's ghost stories were a little too scary for the kids, whose imaginations tend to run wild, especially at night. Olive, my cabin mate, had to give up her bed for a little girl who was convinced Harry's depiction of Slender Man, the tree boy, was going to sneak into her bed and turn her into an apple seed.
Did I say sneak into cabins? I meant dance around the woods,
Harry corrected himself.
And they look for their next unsuspecting victim.
Harry!
Friend!
Harry swallowed his words when a little boy's eyes went wide.
I mean, they are looking for a friend. So the point of my story is, horsey rides get us new friends?
Phoebe wasn't buying it. I could tell from the slight arch of her brow and her widening smile. The girl shook dark curls out of her face, smirking. I think it was her pleading eyes which won him over, because with a sigh which definitely wasn't joking around, the guy dropped onto his knees and practically spat at her to climb on his back, and she did, plonking one sparkling shoe on top of the boy's spine with enough force to send him onto his stomach. I might have been imagining it, but since when were these little so outlandishly spiteful? The little girl was grinning, not because she could ride her horsey, but because Harry looked like he was going to either wring her neck or wring his own. Mom had a talk before I started here, and she made sure to tell me that if adult authority is nowhere to be seen, little kids will start to act out. I could definitely call it acting out. But I had spent all day with her several days earlier playing with dolls and having a teddy bear picnic, when she admitted she didn't want to swim in the lake with the other kids. Phoebe had been shy and only spoke to me through her teddy bear, so what had changed? Could the lack of adults really be scaring the kids that much? Miss Josie? I wasn't paying attention, half noticing some kids had just helped themselves, piling chicken nuggets and cookies on plastic plates, and hurrying to their seats like I couldn't see them. Blinking away brain fog, I found myself face to face with Eli, who is probably my favorite camper. You're not supposed to have personal preferences when working with little kids, because your opinions could upset them. However, it was incredibly hard not to like Eli. Hiding behind a mop of brown curls, the boy was one of the more vocal kids in the group. Eli said he wanted to be an inventor when he was older, and he wanted to make robots. The kid had asked me if I wanted to see his robot collection, but I was too busy with setting up camp activities. Standing in front of me and clutching his tray, the boy was frowning.
Josie, I just saw some kids steal chicken nuggets.
I shrugged, shoveling a large portion on his tray.
Well, you can have some extra too.
Eli's smile wasn't as big as usual.
Where's Teddy?
I pretended to be oblivious, hastily adding more nuggets to his tray as if I could keep his mouth shut with extra food.
He'll be back soon, Teddy is just playing in the woods.
No, he's not. At first, I thought I'd heard the boy wrong. The kid wasn't looking at me, counting his nuggets as usual with the prongs of his plastic fork. I leaned forward with my best smile.
I'm sorry. What was that, Eli?
The kid lifted his head with a wide grin.
Can I borrow a knife, Josie?
Why do you need a knife? Leaning forward, the boy shrugged.
There's a squirrel caught in a trap, he said.
I want to put it out of its misery, Miss Josie. It's in a lot of pain. That was dark.
Well, I can't give you a knife.
I trailed off, my gaze finding Harry in the growing line of kids awaiting a horse ride.
But how about you go and ask Harry for a piggyback ride?
I pointed to myself with a forced grin.
I'll save the squirrel.
And when the boy's eyes filled with tears and he shook his head, I reached out, grasped his hand, and squeezed it as tight as I could.
Eli, we don't need to do that, okay?
I'm sure the squirrel can be saved, and I'll make sure to take it to the vet, okay?
But what if it doesn't need saving?
I squeezed tighter.
I'll save it, Eli. I promise.
Eli didn't look convinced, but he nodded with a grumble.
Okay,
he said before twisting around and joining the other kids torturing Harry. Immediately, I left my station, whether Rowan liked it or not, and headed outside to look for this supposedly dying squirrel. That was something we didn't need. The sky was darkening when I made it into the woods, cotton candy clouds blurring through the thick canopy of trees. Eli said it was near the sign pointing towards the lake, though I couldn't see anything. Odd. That thought retracted in my head, however, when I stepped forward and a squelching sound cut through the silence of my own heavy breaths, mixing with insect chitters and nightlife buzzing above me and beneath me. The wet-sounding squelch twisted my gut, and when I stared down at the ground, I didn't know what I was expecting. A squashed squirrel, perhaps? In Eli's words, the poor thing had been on the edge of death. Though, when I was thinking about it, there was no animal traps around camp. That was basic health and safety. So what the hell was I looking at? The bottom of my shoe was caked in dried blood, but it was the thing which was stamped into the dirt which sent my heart into my throat. It looked like an eye. But looking closer as I lowered myself to the ground, I glimpsed something metallic, something glistening around the pupil. I picked up a stick and prodded it. Though the thing didn't move, it was definitely an eye. The eye of some kind of animal, judging from the pigmentation and the color of the iris. But it was the metallic pieces around the eye which was throwing me off. Part of a trap, maybe? It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that a poor critter had been ripped apart, and a wild bear had dropped its dinner near the camp, and the metal encasing its eye was most likely pieces of trap. Peering closer, though, I glimpsed silver slithers in what appeared to be the destroyed nerve caked to my shoe. After scraping most of it off, I caught glistening pieces of blood-stained metal catching the late setting sun. And this time I pinched a piece between my forefinger and thumb. It didn't look like a bear trap. The metal itself wasn't serrated or old. In fact, it was new. Which begged the question, what was this thing? Whatever it was, it had started converting what looked like a critter's eye before stopping. Was it a virus? When that thought slammed into me, I fell back with a hiss, swiping my hands on my shirt.
What are you doing?
I almost jumped out of my skin, diving to my feet. Carmel was standing behind me, grasping what looked like her sixth or seventh coffee. The girl had been running to and from the coffee machine all day, and I had been silently counting how much caffeine she was consuming. Carmel had been a well-put-together and fairly popular girl when camp started. She immediately had everyone following her beck and call, all of the boys and girls following her around. Carmel wasn't straight. She made that clear on the bus to camp, announcing she wasn't interested in guys and that she had a girlfriend back home. Still, though, the guys followed her because, well, she was pretty. Carmel was my bunkmate and had woken me up on three separate occasions at 6 a.m. to go through the exact same hair and makeup routine. Now, though, there was no sign of makeup or even that she had brushed her hair. Instead of its usual tidy blonde ponytail, Carmel's curls were tied into raggedy pigtails with ribbons. I was sure she had stolen from a camper's doll. I think what was keeping her going was coffee. Carmel regarded me with two wide eyes and a Camp Redwood smile we all knew was fake. She was grasping onto her coffee cup for dear life.
Josie!
She jumped when I jumped, which almost made me laugh.
Rowan's having an emergency meeting in his cabin, she said.
So whatever you're doing can wait. Her gaze flicked to the ground.
What are you doing?
For a brief moment, I considered telling Carmel I may have found what looked like a virus which turned flesh and blood to metal, before I remembered her reaction when a spider had crept into our cabin. Whatever this thing was, keeping it a secret for now was probably what was best. Making sure I was standing on the thing, I shrugged. I was looking for the others. Carmel cocked her head before resting her coffee on the ground. In the dirt? Footprints, Carmel. The girl looked confused before shaking her head. Okay, whatever. Tell the others I'll be there in a sec. I just need to make sure the kids are okay. We're putting a movie on for them in the lunch hall, so that will hopefully distract them for maybe 2 hours. I nodded. Did anyone find a phone? Not with signal. Carmel. I had to fight back the urge to yell at her to keep her voice down. Kids were curious, and I wouldn't be surprised if we had some littles peeking into our conversation. You're okay, I said softly. I mean, we're not okay. Because, yes, things are very screwed up right now, but we need to be optimistic. I exhaled out a breath, searching for eyes in the dark. I tried to smile, tried to keep up that Camp Redwood facade we were all held hostage by until the last day of camp. According to Rule 5 in the Camp Redwood Counselor Handbook, all counselors must retain a smile and a positive attitude. If any counselor is caught making a frowny face or spreading what we call unhappiness, we will be forced to send the counselor home. At this point, I didn't give a damn, but part of me didn't want to scare the little kids. No, Josie, the girl grasped a hold of my shoulders with a grin rivaling the Joker. I am so sick of being told to keep smiling, because what is that doing? 3 of my cabin mates are missing, and I'm the only one left. And Rowan and Co. expect me to keep up this act? We're screwed. She cupped her mouth. Screwed. We have 0 adults. An unexplainable loss of power every few hours, which makes no sense in the middle of nowhere. I mean, what the hell is out there, which is sucking that much power, huh? There is no explanation. There should be an explanation. I should be able to think, oh yeah, that's why. But no, things are happening. And I don't know why they're happening. Rowan is trying to force us to act like things are okay, but in reality, he is crapping himself, Josie. We are all crapping ourselves. I took a step back, keeping hold of her hand. Carmel was trembling, her hands clammy and slimy and tangled in mine. He's just trying to keep the kids from freaking out. She groaned, tears glistening in her eyes. Okay, yeah, I'm blaming them because they keep acting like everything is okay. Everything is okay. I turned to her with what I hoped was a reassuring smile, knowing damn well about the thing I'd found in the dirt. If that thing could spread, it would have a field day in an enclosed space like a summer camp. I noticed my own hands, which had been touching the thing making contact with Carmel, and dropped my hands, inwardly squirming. If that thing was a virus, I was already screwed. Maybe Carmel too. If it was fast-acting, it could explain the counselor disappearances. I was already putting together a plan in my head as we headed back to the main cabin. We had to put together a search party. Some of us would stay with the kids, while a small group would venture into the woods to try and look for traces of the missing. If I was right, we would find a horror scene in the woods, and yes, that would be the time to panic. If I was wrong, however, there was still hope. Are we going to be okay? Carmel's voice sliced into my thoughts, and it took a moment to drink in the camp around us. Usually, when the sky was turning twilight, it would be bustling with campers and counselors toasting marshmallows on the fire and gathering around to fall asleep to Harry's ghost stories. Carmel would be knelt with a bunch of kids watching a YouTube video they had all insisted on her watching, while Rowan would be hiding behind his book with his knees to his chest, his gaze glued to every page he flicked through, ignoring everyone. Teddy making funny faces for kids who were scared, and Connor handing out plates of burgers and hot dogs. I remembered feeling safe and at home, cozy around the flickering orange of the fire as chatter turned to laughter and white noise in my head. After the kids went back to their cabins, the group of us would resume positions around the fire, but this time it was more intimate. With Allison in her cabin, we kind of ignored her rules altogether. Making out happened because of course it did. Beer stolen from Allison's mini fridge and raging hormones, as well as late night skinny dipping in the lake, did that. Couples went off into the woods, and we all felt completely comfortable and at home with each other. Looking around at that moment, I felt sick to my stomach. That feeling was gone. The feeling of family and familiarity and friendship. What I was looking at now was that same log we had all sat on, now turned on its side. Hot dog buns and candy wrappers littering the ground. There was a ghost camp. I could still see Connor's jacket slung on the ground and Lily's bright pink Ray-Ban sitting on a beer can, because there were no adults to yell at us to clean up after ourselves. I was frowning at the skeleton of the fire when Carmel nudged me. "Hey," her voice was shaking slightly. "Josie, you didn't answer my question." Carmel wanted me to be the voice of reason, and I wasn't that. I was just as scared as her. There was only so much I could sugarcoat, and I gave up doing that after the third counselor disappeared. All I could offer her was forced optimism. "Yes," I said. "Just keep the kids busy, all right?"
"Right."
When I was twisting around and power walking to Rowan's cabin, I shouted over my shoulder, "Give them some of those animal crackers."
"What animal crackers?"
I turned to elaborate, but Carmel was gone. When I finally got to Rowan's cabin, I was sweating through my shirt and had an idea of what I was going to tell the others. It was a thing, which could be considered a disease or a virus, so it was vital that we split into two groups. Half of us would search for the others, while the others would look for anything to get in contact with the outside world, an emergency landline, laptop, or cell phone. I did have one problem, which was lack of evidence, all which was left from the thing I found stuck to my foot. The rest of it was buried in the dirt. It was too dark to search for it, and we would be wasting time doing so. All of that was in my mind and tangled on my tongue. One single string of incomprehensible gibberish I wasn't even sure was English, when I stepped into Rowan's cabin, where four sets of eyes met mine. Olive, cross-legged on the floor with her arms folded, Harry pacing up and down with a brand new bruise blooming under his eye, courtesy of Eleanor almost poking his eyes out, and Rowan himself sitting on top bunk, his legs swinging off of the side. The guy wasn't built to be our leader, originally being the laziest of our group, opting for sitting in a tree with a book rather than helping set up camp activities. Yet he'd become our default guy in charge because he so happened to be wearing the head counselor hat when Allison disappeared. Admittedly, it suited him. The bright red of the cap contrasted his dark curls under a late setting sun through the back window, setting strands of straying hair on fire. The hat was a little too big for his head, though, slipping over his eyes. Rowan looked like a divorced father of two, dark circles bruising his eyes and a very dad-like scowl curling on his lips. With a clipboard pressed to his chest and a pen he was chewing on, the boy resembled a grown man who had just caught his daughter coming in after curfew. "Josie," spitting the pen's lid out of his mouth, he scribbled something down. I had no doubt he was tracking my attendance for these stupid crisis meetings. His eyes were wild, scanning me for answers. "Where the hell is Carmel?" I shut the door behind me, leaning against it with my arms folded. "So, we can swear now?" "Yes," Rowan rolled his eyes. "There are no kids here, so go crazy." He pointed at me with the pen. "Carmel, where is she?"
"Keeping the kids busy?"
Callan's muffled voice came from the bottom bunk. I could barely see the guy lying on his stomach, his face stuffed into a pillow. "It was my idea to play Shrek for them, but the little craps said they haven't seen it." The boy lifted his head, his lips carved into a scowl. "I'm sorry. Am I tripping? Everyone's seen Shrek. Do these kids expect the Minecraft movie?"
"They don't like that either."
Harry stopped pacing the cabin. "Eleanor looked at me like I was crazy when I asked if she liked it."
"Fortnite too,"
Olive said, a cushion pressed to her chest. "I suggested playing it a few days ago and like zero kids knew what it was."
"Six counselors are missing," Rowan raised his voice over the others' chatter. "And you're questioning what games they like?"
His eyes found mine once more.
"So Carmel is with the kids? You're absolutely sure of it?"
I nodded. "Yeah, I mean, I just saw her 5 minutes ago."
"Great," Rowan said sarcastically. "I'm sure she won't go missing under mysterious circumstances."
"Stop." Olive shot him a glare, throwing a cushion in his face.
"I told you, they're probably lost, or maybe they went to get help.
We've all been trained to know every inch of these woods." Rowan catapulted the cushion right back at her.
"They're not lost."
"Well, where are they?" Callan sat up, bringing his knees to his chest. I'd never seen the guy look this vulnerable.
"Allison made sense. She probably has some other duties and left us to look after the kids, but six counselors? All of them disappearing?" Our phone signal completely cutting out, electricity cutting off, not once, but twice. What is even sucking all of our power?
I got the emergency generator working. Olive raised her arm. Connor and I managed it before. She trailed off.
Before Connor disappeared?
Callan finished for her.
And before him it was Joey, Lily, Mira, Yuri, Noah, and Teddy. Which isn't a damn coincidence.
He shot Rowan a look, who glared down at his lap. I could tell the boy didn't want to lead all of us, come up with plans and answer questions we desperately needed answering. His job was to look after us, as well as the littles, and so far he was doing a pretty good job. I could tell by his expression that he thought the opposite, but he had managed to keep the kids from finding out about something as sinister as someone actively kidnapping counselors. He made sure they were fed, entertained, and safe watching a movie, while we were scared for our lives. Rowan was keeping up the facade no matter how scared he was. The boy dropped his head into his lap with a sigh. It looked like he might fall asleep before he slammed the clipboard into his face to wake himself up. Nobody wanted to admit what Callan was saying, but we were all definitely thinking it. This was planned, Callan continued.
Someone out here is messing with us, very clearly trying to freak us out. Now they've got six of us.
He spread out his arms.
How long until one of the littles gets taken, huh? A bunch of 18-year-olds aren't going to satisfy them, so what about when they start taking campers? We're in the middle of the damned nowhere with a serial kidnapper on the loose? And did we just leave 15 kids in the care of a girl who thought Australia was in England?
In Carmel's defense, she was blackout drunk when she said that, Olive murmured.
Voices down, Rowan hissed. Do you want to scare them?
His gaze flicked to me.
Did you do a head count during dinner?
I nodded.
15 kids, all accounted for. 10 are in the lunch hall, and 5 girls are in Cassie's cabin playing Operation.
All day? Olive spoke up. Weren't they playing that in the morning? I tried to get into their cabin to give them breakfast, but they just shooed me away and locked the door.
Ah, hell. Rowan ran his fingers down his face. All right. I'll go and see what's going on with them. Knowing Cassie and her friends, they're probably zonked out on stolen candy. When all of the kids are accounted for in the lunch cabin, we gather outside.
I swallowed, speaking up.
I actually wanted to talk to you guys about something.
Rowan lifted his head, jutting the edge of the clipboard into his chin. Go on.
I found something.
I pulled a face. I think I found something.
I wasn't sure how to explain to a dwindling group of exhausted teenagers that there may be something even more terrifying than potential kidnappers out there.
4 blank faces stared back at me, and Rowan leaned forward with a frown.
Like, in general? Josie, we don't have time to go foraging.
You should call it a lead, I said, but I need your eyes to find it.
Uh-huh, but what is it?
Thinking back to what exactly I had seen, I had no idea how to describe it.
It's better if I just showed you.
Rowan looked skeptical but nodded.
All right, Josie, comes with me. We'll check out Allison's cabin again to look for an emergency line, and you can show me whatever this thing is you found. Then we'll escort Cassie and the other girls to the lunch cabin. Every camper needs an escort from now on. The rest of you, act normal. If the kids see you freaking out, they will also freak out. We need to keep up morale.
The boy pointed to Olive.
Olive, you sit in with the kids and look after them. Callan, check out the emergency generator. Harry, the kids see you as a playground ride, so use that to your advantage. Offer them horse rides if they're scared, and stop with the ghost stories. It's making it worse. Give them piggybacks.
Harry rolled his eyes.
Do I have a choice?
No.
Rowan cleared his throat. We all keep up appearances. If the others turn up after getting high or, I don't know, having an orgy in the woods, I will kill them.
The way he smiled through his teeth, jumping off the bunk, his toes primed like a wild animal, I knew he wasn't joking. If this was a well-constructed prank the other counselors were playing, I had no doubt Rowan would rip them apart for leaving him as a reluctant leader. To my surprise, the others wandered off with their tasks. And I watched Rowan lift up his pillow and pull out a pack of animal crackers, ripping open the bag and pouring the contents into his mouth. He caught my eye, crunching through many animal crackers.
I didn't have lunch, he said through a mouthful.
I couldn't help feeling a sense of relief as we headed across camp. Rowan was in front of me while I lagged behind.
So, what's the plan?
I caught up to him, almost tripping over a log. The guy didn't turn around.
I am completely winging it. He said through a choked laugh. I have no idea what I'm doing. If I'm honest, I just want to go home, dude. I haven't looked after this many kids in my life, and if I have to smile one more time as a little brat, I am going to lose my mind. He heaved out a breath. I am making this up as I go along. I laughed that time. That's comforting. Yeah? He turned to shoot me a grin. Well, rest assured, I am just about as scared, if not more scared than you. As we stopped in front of Cassie's cabin, his gaze found mine. Is it me? He said softly. Or does this cabin seem quiet? He was right. The windows were dark when they should have been illuminated by the TV screen. Instead of answering, I stepped in front of him, grasping hold of the cabin door. Cassie? I knocked three times. Girls, are you okay in there? It's Josie and Rowan. I tried the door and it slid open. Shooting a look at the boy behind me, I turned back to the door. We're coming in, okay? Wait, Cassie squeaked from inside. But he's not finished. Ignoring the coil of dread unraveling in my gut, I forced the door open and stepped into unusually milky white light which flooded the cabin. The first thing I saw was 8-year-old Cassie, sitting cross-legged with her back to me. She was sitting in a circle with the other girls, no doubt playing their game. When I stepped closer, however, I noticed something pooling across the wooden floor. It must have been juice or water that they had spilled. I took another step, but this time clammy fingers wrapped around my wrist and yanked me back. Rowan didn't speak, but his eyes were elsewhere. Initially, they had been drinking in the cabin before they found oblivion entirely. I heard his breath start to accelerate, his grip tightening on my wrist. I had half a mind to pull away before I saw the body-shaped carcass the girls were sitting around. In the dim light of the cabin, it used to be a person. Teddy. I could still see parts of an identity. Freckled cheeks and eyes which were still open, still staring at the sky. But that was where the similarities to the missing counselor ended. The thing which used to be Teddy was more of a shell, a scooped-out thing resembling a human body. What sent me stumbling backwards, my mouth open in a silent scream, was the almost surgical efficiency of each organ's removal. Like it really was a game of operation. His heart, lungs, and intestines were in one pile, while his brain was cupped between little Cassie's bloody hands. And when my gaze found the little girl, Nina, hiding behind dark curly hair, I was seeing what looked like a toy robot's head in her hands. In my head, I was thinking about the eye with the metallic pieces glittering around its pupil, and something turned in my gut. Did I find a human eye? I was staring at the crevice inside the boy's skull, and the boxes of surgical equipment piled on the girl's bunks, when Rowan finally pulled me back, and I was stumbling straight onto my ass. We need to go. Rowan spoke through a croak. Cassie's words rattled in my head. Teddy, I thought. Teddy wasn't finished. Josie, get up, now. My head was spinning and I was sure I'd thrown up. I didn't even realize we had managed to stumble from the girl's cabin before cool air grazed my face, tickling my cheeks. Something wet and warm and lumpy was spattering the front of my shirt. Before I could coerce words, the boy was pulling me to my feet and I was seeing stars in my eyes, blinking brightly. When the two of us started forwards in a run, Rowan stopped abruptly. I followed his gaze to find several kids surrounding his cabin, where Harry, Olive, and Callan were. Maybe I was hallucinating, but Eleanor and Phoebe, both of whom wielding weapons where I had no idea where they had gotten them, looked taller? Rowan didn't waste time, dragging me back. Allison's cabin, he spoke in a cry which became a sob, pulling me across camp, stumbling over rocky ground. We need a phone. Hell, we need a phone. We need a phone. Rowan was struggling to stand, occasionally bending over and choking up dust. They were playing Operation. Literal Operation. But they're just kids, I choked out. Little kids who had surgically removed every organ inside Teddy's body. Little kids who were hunting the other counselors down and would surely be coming for us. Allison's cabin was thankfully further into the woods. When we were safe inside and Rowan was locking the door, I dry-heaved several times, unable to get the sight of glistening gore splattering the cabin floor from my mind. Josie! Rowan was already tearing apart the cabin. Work with me here, okay? We don't have time to freak out or to barf. We need to get help, now. Rowan was freaking out, and when he hit the ground on his knees, I took over. I searched Allison's desk first. Nothing of importance, just documents and invoices.
Digging through her drawer, there was still nothing. We were running out of time. Abandoning the desk, I went through her suitcase and bags. When I was crawling under her bed to try and find a weapon, Rowan hissed out, "Wait!" When I turned to him, he was still kneeling, but his foot was clamping down on a loose plank. The guy didn't hesitate, pulling at the loose plank, which, to my confusion, revealed what looked to me like a trap door. Rowan turned to me. "You're kidding." I could only stare at the trap door revealing stone steps. He peered down, his voice echoing, "Allison has a damn secret bunker?" His lips curved into a surprisingly childish grin which took me off guard. "Oh, wow, that's so cool." Lifting my head at the sound of loud squealing, I glimpsed a group of littles led by Eleanor stalking towards us. Eleanor had a hostage, Harry, and with the way she was sticking the blade of a scary-looking knife to his throat, I figured she meant business. Their height difference was almost comical. The 18-year-old guy had to hunch over so the little girl could successfully keep him prisoner. Behind them in the trees, I could see something illuminating the dark, an electric blue light bathing their faces. So that was where their power was going. But what the hell were these 8-year-olds doing? "Josie!" Rowan hissed from down below. He had already climbed down. I joined him, struggling down the stone steps before replacing the loose plank. If these kids were as smart as I thought, it wouldn't take them long to realize the loose plank, also a trapdoor. Allison's bunker was more of a control room. There were multiple screens lit up, a chair in front of a working MacBook. The phone line was cut, but that didn't make sense. The kids were unaware of the bunker, so who cut the phone lines? Rowan was on the laptop, struggling to get through the password protection, so I turned my attention to piles of cardboard boxes. When I opened them, I found myself staring at animal crackers. There were hundreds of them, packed on top of each other. Looking further, digging through the boxes, I found myself a piece of old crumpled paper which looked ancient. "Regarding Project Spearhead subjects, please do not ingest unless absolutely necessary. If multiple subjects ingest, please use self-destruct. Only use in such cases such as imminent destruction to the planet, threat of nuclear war. Please contact families in advance. Make sure to ingest with water to avoid neurological symptoms such as psychosis, extreme violence. Please approach subjects with caution." Something ice cold slithered down my spine. Abandoning the boxes, I searched through a cabinet filled with files which were crumbling apart from age. I picked one at random and flicked through it. Eleanor Summers. Sex, female. Date of birth, 08/05/1977. Initially, I thought I was reading the dates wrong, but then, with my heart in my throat, I was grasping for other files. Eli Evermore, sex, male, date of birth, 08/03/1979. "Rowan?" I managed to get out through a breath. "Hmm? They're not children." The boy rubbed his eyes, frowning. His eyes were half-lidded, almost confused. "Huh?" "Eleanor," I whispered, "is 45 years old." He nodded slowly, turning back to the laptop. "How do you spell documents? I'm looking for digital versions, but I can't find any." "You don't know how to spell documents? It's been a hard day," the boy whined, tipping his head back and blowing a raspberry. Whatever I was going to say was choked in the back of my throat, when a loud bang sounded from above. The sounds of childish giggling coming through the floorboards, but the laughter didn't sound like little kids. No, it sounded like teenagers who were acting like little kids. I stared at the boxes of animal crackers, and then at the file confirming Eleanor's real age. My own words shuddered through me, and I remembered finding Teddy's dismembered carcass in Cassie's cabin. When I caught her gaze, the little girl didn't look scared, and somehow her fingers wrapped around the scalpel looked just right, like the little bitch knew exactly what she was doing. "Hello?" Harry's voice was a hysterical giggle. "Ali Ali Oxenfree, are you here?" Carmel joined in. I could hear their footsteps above, dancing across the room. Clamping my hand over my mouth, I dragged my knees to my chest and prayed they weren't smart enough to figure out we were right underneath them. Knowing the truth about them, though, I wasn't counting on it. That was an hour ago. We're still stuck down here and I can't get a connection here, thank God. For some reason, Allison has blocked all social media. We need help. We're at Camp Redwood, and these kids are not kids. Whatever Project Spearhead is, was designed to keep them here.
The phone line is cut, so we can't get help from whoever was helping Allison. I'm counting on you guys. Get us out of here. And that's the end of this first part. I think I messed up that ending. That is the end of this first part. That's better. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know in the comments below. This is part one, so a couple more to go. I hope you'll stick around and hear this one out. Yeah, let me know your thoughts. Like the video, episode, wherever you're listening from. Let me know what you thought. And subscribe for more, because why not, right? Because, I mean, this voice is the best on the internet, and people should subscribe for that, right? But anyways, I'm just joking. I hope you did enjoy yourself. Thank you to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. And with all that said, we'll see you in the next part. Take care now. Bye-bye then.